Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP Section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guests.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and we're honored to be here with Ed Slott to talk about the intersection of 199 Cap A and retirement plan benefits.
Welcome. Great to be here. Thanks, Bob. Very complicated topic, and it even gets more complicated when you add the retirement planning aspect to the already complicated qualified business income deduction.
Ed, I think you were one of the first people to see this. So in general, in the world of 199 Cap A, we get this 20% deduction, which means for some people, your pension plan, strangely enough, only becomes an 80% deduction. So let's start right there, and how does that math work? So I earn a dollar, but I only pay tax on 80 cents, so if I take a retirement plan deduction, it really doesn't benefit me as much as it could. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Right. Well, you go back to the fundamentals of all good tax planning. Always pay taxes at the lowest rates. Now, that sounds easy, but there's a lot to that. By that, we mean you pick up income, hopefully at the lower rates, and get deductions at the higher rates. Now, with retirement accounts, it works the other way. For most tax-deferred accounts like 401ks and IRAs, SEP contributions, you get the deduction first, and then you pick up the income. So you want to get the deduction ideally at a higher rate where it's worth more, and then pick up the income, hopefully in retirement, where it's worth more because you're at a lower bracket when you pick it up. So that's how you gain the spread on the rates. Now, with the 199A deduction, what that's doing, it sounds good, and it is good for some people. You get a 20% deduction for those people who qualify. But when you put a retirement account in there, because especially adding the new stuff that came in with the final regs, that retirement account contribution, you're not getting the full deduction. You're getting 80% of it. Yet, when you pick it up as income, you're picking up 100% of it. So that's not a good deal. So what I'm seeing is that you have to look at that in two respects. Maybe a Roth is better, because with a Roth, you're not getting the deduction. But you don't pick it up as income, so that may be a good trade-off. So you may be better off in a plan with a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA contribution. Also, the second respect is, I know you're going to talk about this, when you finally get down to the end of the QBI deduction, you have to do that comparison to see if it's larger than taxable income. So here's the inconsistency there in tax planning. Believe it or not, a Roth conversion might help you increase income. In other words, to pay less income tax in the long run, you might have to add income. So a Roth conversion can increase your income. It will increase your income in most cases, and that might increase your taxable income, giving you a larger QBI deduction.
And see, that's a very important observation, and let's focus on that for a second. I'll start with 199 Cap A. What 199 Cap A says is if your business income is $100, but your total taxable income is only $70, there's a mismatch, and you can only take your 20% deduction off the lower $70. So then along comes a question. How do I create equilibrium between my QBI amount and my taxable income? And what you do there is you do a Roth conversion. In this case, you do a $30 Roth conversion, which would push your income up to 100. Your QBI would be at 100, and then you get your full QBI deduction. So far we've gone through two concepts. One is when you're putting money in a pension plan, for many clients, that are receiving a nice, clean 20% deduction, they should probably put money onto the Roth side of the equation, not the regular side.
Exactly right, because you're not getting the full bang for your buck. You're only getting 80% of the deduction, yet because you're getting the deduction, you have to pick it up as income sometime in retirement, and you're going to pick up 100%. So take a simple, a regular SEP contribution for self-employed. Let's say they put in $20,000 deduction. They're only effectively getting the benefit of a $16,000 deduction, yet when they pick up that $20,000 of income, they have to pick up all of it, and that's not a good situation.
No, and I get that. That makes sense. Now, and on the Roth side, all we're saying is we can enhance our 199 deduction by having higher income, which I think in essence means that your Roth conversion, only 80% of it gets taxed if you're just creating that perfect equilibrium. So there's something else for us to think about. Now, Ed, there's a more important thing that financial planners and CPAs have been talking about is when my income's too high. So let me lay this out, and I'll let you explain it. Let's say that your cousin is a dentist, and she makes exactly $415,000 using the 2018 numbers. But then you put her into enough pension plans between defined benefit and defined contribution to get her income below 315. Now, keeping in mind, we have to start with that she's in a specified service business, which means at 415 she was getting no deduction. Why do we want to create those pensions?
Well, because now you can bring her back in. Remember, as you said, I think you said up above, when you're under the limits, this is not an issue. You get the 20% deduction. But once you're in the phase-out range or over it, that's when all of this takes place. So in that case, a tax deduction, maybe a large one like you're saying, even a defined benefit plan, something big like that, can bring that person under the limit so they get something. They salvage some part or maybe all of the 20% deduction.
See, and that becomes very important. So one tool that we should all have in our toolbox is if somebody's in a specified service business and they're being pushed out of the 199 Cap A deduction, what we want to do for them is go and get them into some type of defined benefit or defined contribution plan if we can, reduce their income to get them back in. Now, what would that do mathematically? At 415, write these numbers down. At 415, they pay income tax on $415,000. At 315, they get a $63,000 deduction, meaning they only pay tax on $252,000. That last $100,000 of income caused their income to go up by $163,000. And if you turn around with a $100,000 deduction, you'll cause their income to go down by $163,000. So it's a little confusing, but it's really important to understand how steep that cliff is.
Right, right. And you have to look at all of these things. There are break-even points in all of these. I don't really know if there's computer programs that do this. This is really back to old school days where the accountant takes out their pad, you know, their seven-column pad, and says, well, here's what you lose, here's what you gain. And, for example, we were talking to about a Roth conversion. How much of a Roth conversion do you need? How much of a pension plan contribution do you need? How much should be tax-deferred? How much should go into a Roth? Because you're playing these levels, but you also want tax efficiency to not only get the 20% deduction, but get the biggest bang out of a deduction to a pension account and get the biggest 20% deduction by having income exceed taxable income for that final test.
Now, Ed, I'd like to cover one more thing. And what if you have somebody that's 65 years old and they're getting closer to their RMDs, but they're still working, and they ask you, should I put money in a pension plan? And we're kind of back to that 80%, 100% thing. And walk us through that. So walk us through how that works.
Well, then they're tightening the time. Remember, if they put money in a plan, and depending on how long they keep working, eventually that may end up in an IRA. So there's going to be a shorter time frame between the time they only get an 80% bang out of the deduction and they have to start picking up 100% of income. But when they start picking it up in RMDs, obviously they're not taking the whole thing out. They're taking very small bits, just RMDs out. So you could make a case that even though you're picking up 100% of income, you're picking up very little over a long period of time and still getting a big chunk of the tax deferral.
And I think that's very important for people to understand. A 25-year-old right out of dental school may not care that she loses some of her QBI deduction because she's going to put that money away for 45 years. Also, she's putting it in an ERISA-protected environment from her creditors.
Right, right.
But
so, yeah, you're right. So you have to look at the time frame between when you're putting the money in. That's why your example with the 65-year-old versus a 25-year-old, you have to look at when you're putting the money in to when you're taking it out. Because we keep saying, well, when you take it out, you'll pay tax on 100%. But in your 25-year-old example, that may not be for 40 or 50 years.
No, and this is all very important. So I want to go through and just summarize the key theories here. One is this whole, we'll call 80-100 problem. 80% benefit, 100% tax later. So that's the first thing we look out for. Two.
Right, but you have to see how much later. So
much
it
later.
May not be as big a problem as we're saying. We're just giving the math. But if that income is not going to be picked up for much later, it may not be as important of a factor.
Two, down with income, meaning there will be some people who should be getting themselves into pension plans so that they can get their income down to make it easier to qualify for 199 Cap A.
And right, but not down so far, too far, that their taxable income is lower than their QBI income.
Exactly. They have to create that equilibrium. And if somebody doesn't have that equilibrium between their taxable income and their QBI, then I think what we're thinking is the easiest thing to do is to do a small Roth conversion.
Right, right. To bring that income up to the break-even point where you get the maximum QBI deduction and it's not limited or lowered by your taxable income in that final test.
Ed, this has been fascinating to talk to you today and to bring all these things into perspective. Hopefully, our listeners will come away from this with a few gems of information, maybe a different perspective. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler with Ed Slott. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access additional PFP benefits. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening today.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.